Chitichaya Yamagata
Vasana Kalpaye Swapne
Vasana Kalpaye Swapne
Bhutekshaya Vishayam Bahihi
Bhutekshaya Vishayam Bahihi
Manoham Kirtyupadanam
Manoham Kirtyupadanam Lingam mekam jadatmakam Avastha trayamandeti
Jayate
mriyate tatha
Shakti
vayam himayaya Vikshepa vritti rupakam
Vikshepa shaktir lingadi
Vikshepa shaktir lingadi
Brahmandantam jagat srijet
Brahmandantam jagat srijet
Srishtir nama brahma rupe
Srishtir nama brahma rupe Satchidananda Vastuni
Abdhavpena Vivat Sarva
Abdhavpena Vivat Sarva
Namarupa Prasarana
Namarupa Prasarana Antardriktrishyayorbhedam Vahishcha Brahma Sargayoho Avarno Yaparashakti Sa Samsarasya Karanam Sakshinah Purato Bhati Lingam dehena samyutam
Chikichaya samaveshat
Chikichaya samaveshat
Jivasya
vyavaharikah
Asya jivakumaropat
Asya jivakumaropat Sakshinya pravabhasate Avritta tu vinashtayam Bhede bhate payatitat Tatha sarga brahmanoscha Vedamavritya tishtati
Yashaktis-tattva-shat-brahma
Vikrtattvena-bhasate
Vibhati
Brahma Sargayoho Vibhāti Brahma Sargayoho Vedastayor Vikārasya Sargena Brahma Nikvacite
Atra Api Avrati Nāshena. So Atra Api Avrati Nāshena Nāshena Vibhāti Brahma Sarga Yoho. So Brahma Sarga Yoho. Bhedaha Tayoho Vikaraha Syat Sarge Na Brahmani Kochit. So we've been talking about avritti, the avarana, the covering. And when we were talking about it initially in reference to the jiva, the drikdrisha adhyasa, the superimposition between the seer and seeing is there. But once knowledge takes place, once that viveka, that difference is made clear, right, then at that time, when that ajnanam is removed, that superimposition is also the removal of the ajnanam, the removal of the superimposition is there, and then that in doing that, there's a destruction, a removal, a complete removal of the avritti of the covering, and at that time, then I'm just recognizing myself, the nature of the self, and then the nature of the body, mind, sense organs, the viveka is there, the avritti, the covering having been destroyed. So then the next verse, then having talked about the jiva and the avritti in reference to the jiva, in reference to the seer seeing differentiation. Next he talks about the avritti, that covering in reference to Brahman and the creation, the sarga and Brahman, the Brahman and the creation. And so as long as that covering is there, that shakti, that avarana shakti or avritti shakti, as long as that is there, then under the spell of that, Brahman appears to be subject to modifications. That Brahma vikrita twain and vasate. Brahman appears to be subject to, appears to have as its own characteristics modifications. So Brahman itself is continually modifying the reality. This is the reality, and this reality is continually changing. When that avarna is removed, then there's something else. So here, this in verse 19, we're talking about now the removal of the avarna, the avritti, the covering, in reference to Brahman and sarga, Brahman and the creation. Whereas before, it was in reference to the jiva, the drisha. So that's why it says etra api. Here also, in reference to this covering of the beda, of the distinction between Brahman and the creation. Here also, as before, the distinction between the drik and the drisha, the seer and the seen. Here also, when there is a covering of that distinction between Brahman and the creation. So atra api here also. Avriti nashena, when there is the destruction, the destruction of the avriti. Nasha means to destroy, to eliminate. The avriti nashena, 3.1, by the avriti nashena, by the destruction of the covering, vibhati sargayoho bedaha. The distinction, the viveka, bedaha, the distinction, the differentiation between Brahman and sarga. Brahma sargayoho is 6.2, where we can use between, because it's a dwandva compound. So the bedaha between Brahman and the creation, vibhati is clear. It's apparent, right? When is it apparent? When the avritti has been destroyed, when that covering has been destroyed, through jnanam, through viveka jnanam, discriminative knowledge, this covering is removed, is destroyed. by the destruction of the avritti, of the covering, the beta between the viveka, the distinction between Brahman and the creation is clear. Then what? Tayoho, of these two, Brahman and Sarga, Brahman and the creation, so of these two, 6-2, Vikaraha, Syat Sarge, the Vikara, the modification, the Vikara means modification, the modification, Syat Sarge, is in the creation. Right? Any Vikriti, any type of modification, Syat, that is definitely, so here potential used in the sense of definiteness. So the Vikara, the modification, Syat, is definitely Sarge, in the creation, it belongs to the creation. Right, locative 6-7-1, Sarge. Na Brahmani Kwachit, na Kwachit. Never, at any time, is it in Brahman, Brahmani, in Brahman, 7-1. So na Kwachit, never, na Kwachit, Syat. Never is it, is the Vikara. So it would be, the Vikara has Syat, na Brahmani Kwachit. Is never at any time in Brahman. The vikara, these modifications, are only belong to the creation. That viveka is not there. Until that viveka, that discrimination is there, what do we experience? This creation is the reality. The creation is, and it is continually changing. There is no viveka between the creation as mithya, really, as being dependent on the satyam, the satchit, the conscious being, as its adhishtana. Remember this relationship between satyam and mithya? It's a kind of a very interesting, very different type of karyakarana sambandha. Karyakarana sambandha means the sambandha, the connection, the relationship between the karya, the effect, and the karana, the cause. So if I say, here the karyakarana sambandha is not exactly, you know, what we know as a relationship between cause and effect. Here the karyakarana, the cause-effect sambandha relationship, is between mithya and satyam, where mithya depends totally on satyam, on what is satyam for its being. So this, all of these nama-rupas have for their upadana-karana, their material cause, conscious being, but conscious being goes through no modification, no change whatsoever to become the effect. And yet the effect, this maya, this whole maya, this whole universe, the whole sarga, the whole creation, depends totally upon conscious being for its being, just like the pot depends 100% on the clay for its being, to the extent that really there is nothing there but clay, but I experience the pot. But if I were to tell you and say, do you realize that you're experiencing the pot, but really only clay is there? Oh, yes, yes. Right? Because in that case, it's absolutely obvious. So in that case, the satyam mithya relationship is an obvious thing, because it's very clear to us that the pot has no independent being from the clay. It totally depends on the clay for its being. In fact, there is only clay there. That's the satyam mithya relationship. Then we can say in that satya-mitya relationship, and using the clay pot again, the clay is the upadana karanam. It's the material cause of the pot, but itself doesn't change its nature in any way to become the pot. Right? So the pot is mitya, the clay is satyam, within the confines of this example. Of course, the clay breaks up into parts, etc., etc. But within the confines of this example, just simply the relationship between the clay, nama rupa, and the pot, the satya-mitya relationship is very, very clear. And so now, in understanding what is the cause of this creation, what is the upadana karana, what is actually here, what is it that fills the rupa? Because the nama rupa will always be mitya, even within empirical reality, because the nama-rupa, name and form, will at all times be depending on its content to be, you know? Just think, any nama-rupa, what is filling it? So here, what is filling this creation? What is it that is actually here, you know? So what is actually here is the sat-chit-swarupa that we call Brahman. Brahman, whose nature is being, existence itself, which is consciousness, which in fact is me. Because when we ask what is the What is the upadana karana, the material cause really of this entire creation? This body, mind, sense organs are included in that creation, right? It's not at all, there's nothing at all separate about this body that separates this body, mind, sense organs from the creation. I am part and parcel of this whole story, of the whole story I find myself in, the whole world, the world that I find myself in, this body is included in that world. Right? So what is the upadana karana of this creation really? It is the sat-chit consciousness, it is Brahman. That means that the upadana karana of this world is Brahman. That means the upadana karana, the material cause of me, this body, mind, sense organs, is also Brahman. So what makes Brahman Brahman? Right? What makes Brahman Brahman? What makes Brahman infinite? What makes that sat-chit conscious being infinite is that, from the standpoint of conscious being, it is non-objective. It is, first of all, that's important, it is, and it is non-objectifiable to be able to share its space with anything. If something is non-objectifiable, there's nothing to divide me from you or from Ishwara. We would need some space to come in there and say, well, there's this pocket of consciousness space, this pocket of consciousness space, this pocket of consciousness space. Because of space, this pocket of consciousness is a larger pocket than this little tiny pocket of consciousness. And all of the upadis and everything comes into being once we are able to put consciousness into the me, into this creation as an object. But we can't. It's not possible to do that. Because anything that we might want to use to divide me from you is actually objectified. Actually comes into being and goes out of being. It's not something that I'm carrying around with me all of the time. My being is here all of the time. But anything that can be objectified, including from space on, to your mind, your body, your sense organs, anything that can be objectified, you know, is something that is differentiated from me. And also, just in my own experience, anything that can be objectified, I can be without. The Avastha Trayasakshi, this prakriya, this teaching methodology of the witness of the waking dream and deep sleep, it's called the Avastha Trayasakshi. This prakriya, this teaching methodology, right, makes this so, it's so powerful in that way, because I actually recognize my being, the presence of my being, as the self of the waker in the waking state, as the self of the dreamer in the dream state, as the one who, when the mind in the waking state and the dream state is in unmanifest causal condition, is free of any type of knowership or doership or subject-object experience. Then when I wake up, I have a memory of that state. I said, I didn't know anything at that time. But, you know, when I was sleeping, I had the most interesting dream, and at that time, this is what happened, you know? And then I wake up, and now here I am in the waking state. There is what we call an anuvritti, a continuation of my presence, the me, in all three states, never being negated. What does this mean? That for me there is no knowership, there is no objectification of myself in any state, like there is in the waking state. This body, mind, sense organs is objectified. In the dream state, whatever body, mind, sense organs I'm identified with, that is objectified. In the deep sleep state, nothing is objectified, just one big ignorance. Atma, in either state, your being, is not objectified. Right? You're not a little pocket of conscious being walking around in the waking state, or in the dream, or in the deep sleep state. You simply are. And so, there, since time and space itself belong to the creation, what is going to limit you or divide you? Getting rid of space is enough, let alone getting rid of time. There's nothing to limit you, there's nothing to divide you, there's nothing to differentiate you, because you're not objectifiable as an object, you don't exist in time and space to be differentiated one thing for another, and so from your own standpoint, you are just non-dual Atma. This non-dual Atma is limitless because there aren't two of us, and because everything within this sarga is subject to vikriya, is subject to modification. That means there is nothing in this creation that doesn't come into being and go out of being. By the mere fact that something comes into being and goes out of being, it must be mitya. That's enough. That's all you need. Comes into being, it goes out of being. That means it's bordered by non-existence. It has a prior non-existence and a posterior non-existence. Comes from non-existence, going into non-existence. Therefore, because it can't be non-existent, it can't come from non-existence, and it can't go into non-existence, if it is, right? Then, if it enjoys existence, then it must be borrowing existence. Like the pot is borrowing the existent clay. Right? Say that, imagine the form coming into being from non-existence, stays in non-existence, and goes out non-existent. There's nothing, there's no adhishtana for it to rely on for its being. Then it is not, basically. And so that's why anything that is subject to change must be mitya. It must rely on that which is in order for it to be. And so that's our situation with the creation, with time and space itself. Time and space itself comes into manifestation as it goes out of manifestation. And this is also very interesting and important. You can be without the experience of time and without the experience of space. In dream is another type of space than is the waking state. In deep sleep, there is no time or space. In the dream, this is another way to understand it too. In the dream, it has its own time and space that is a dream material, right? Subtle. In the waking state, there is its own time and space. The time and space comes with a manifestation of the creation. It's part and parcel of it. And when the creation is in an unmanifest condition, time and space also is an unmanifested condition. And so all vikaras, all modifications require time and space. Time and space itself belong to the creation. They're objectifiable. They can no way limit me, nor do they have, can they have any independent reality by the mere fact that there is vikara, there's modification there. It's going to be bordered by non-existence. They have to depend upon being. They don't have being. They must depend upon being. I am that being. And so the limitless of myself is in twofold. Because I'm not objectifiable, I can't be limited by time or space or quality. It can't be a quality either. Quality would require differentiation, so there can't be quality either. I am existence, which is consciousness, which is limitless. So no limitation there. And no limitation by the nature of the creation, because the creation is mitya. It has no being of its own to make two, just like you can't say the pot and the clay are two. There's only one pot, and there's only one clay and a mitya pot. That mitya pot doesn't have any being for there to be two. So here's this one self in a mitya creation, and there can't be two. And so that's when we say the Atma, which is Brahman. Brahman itself, the word Brahman means limitless. That limitless being, the being that has nothing bigger than itself, that which is limitless. So we say the Atma is Brahman. It is the self whose nature is limitless, is Brahman. So this me that I take to be the Pratyagatma, this innermost self that's indwelling the body, mind, sense organs by its nature, is limitless, because in itself, from your own standpoint, you're not objectifiable as an object to be limited by time and space. Nor, from your own standpoint, can there be a second thing if you're not objectifiable or not an object in space. So this me is, in fact, the very adhishtana, the very truth, the self that I am, the very truth of this whole creation. So then when we're doing a meditation, and the meditation we did this morning, you're just sitting with your own being, recognizing this me as Brahman. And recognizing that all the experiences, whether it be the surf, or the feeling of the wind, or the sounds of the birds chirping, or your physical experiences or thoughts, moving through, all of those experiences are Ishwa, because all of them take place in my one known dual self. This one non-dual self is Ishwar. There's only not two selves. And so therefore, every experience that I have exists because of this one non-dual self. And so there is no experience that is not Ishwar. So the whole thing is Ishwar. Even the experiences that are abiding in the jiva, in the individual minds, those are all Ishwar. They're all following the laws of the laws, the subtle laws and the physical laws. So yeah, they come from me. Yeah, they come from you, but everything about you is Ishwar. Yeah, they come from my body and my mind. Yeah, but your body and mind is Ishwar. So even though they're coming from this body and mind, so many experiences, which is true, the fact that they're coming from the body and mind, which is part of Vyavahara, is part of empirical reality, this body and mind itself belongs to Ishwara. So think of the dreams. Think you have a dream and you have taken a character in the dream. Then you say, no, that's me in the dream, and then, you know, I'm existing in Ishwara. Okay, you're existing in Ishwara. Is there anything about you that isn't Ishwara? I'm existing in Ishwara, okay. But the one who's existing in Ishwara, is it separate than Ishwara? In the dream, can you pull anything out of the dream? Say you're the Ishwara of the dream. Can you pull anything out and say that that's not part and parcel of Ishwara? No, you can't. But you can say, but I'm identified with that part. True enough. That is because of Ajnanam. That's what creates the jiva. Because you're identified with that part, you take the yourself, which is actually the non-dual self of the whole dream, to belong to this little one, you know, and then that little one has their self, and that one has their self, and that one has their self, but actually the self that everybody, the me, that everybody is enjoying, is the one non-dual me, which is the very self of Ishwara. The whole dream is Ishwara. The body-mind, all body-mind sense organs are all part of that one Ishwara, where you're looking at yourself subjectively as the Ishwara of your dream, or you're looking at the self objectively as the self of the whole creation. In any case, the one non-dual self that you are with this whole creation, whole Maya Upadhi, is what we call Ishwara. So in other words, I am Ishwara. And the body, mind, sense organs, which due to Ajnanam, self-ignorance I identify with, that is also Ishwara. There is nothing here that is not Ishwara. And so let Ishwara live. Let Ishwara be. That's the state of a Jivan Mukta, somebody who's really liberated, and all the raga dveshas have been fallen off over time, you know, so they're not any likes and dislikes pulling at you, let me have this or let me have that so that I can be happy. You look at, for Jnani, you look at the raga dveshas, the likes and dislikes, as they're non-binding desires, but they also belong to Ishwara, they're part of the Ishwara Shakti. So a desire comes up, let that desire be. Let it be fulfilled or not be fulfilled. That's up to Bhagawan. You know, Bhagawan is the Karmapala Hetu. Right? From our verse, the Karmapala Hetu is Ishwara, not the Jiva. In fact, the Karta also is Ishwara. For the Mumukshu, beginning knowledge, we own up that Karta is belonging to me because I haven't realized yet that the only thing here is Bhagawan. As the raga dveshas, these likes and dislikes fall off, I enjoy letting Bhagawan be. I become as though a servant to Bhagawan. It's a beautiful verse. I can't remember to quote it in the Sanskrit. But it's a beautiful verse. It's a prayer. It's one shloka, an eka shloki. It says, O Lord, from the standpoint of my body, this is Shankara. Shankara wrote this verse. It's an eka shloki, one shloka. O Lord, from the standpoint of my body, I am your servant. From the standpoint of my mind, I am your devotee. From the standpoint of myself, I am you. Yeah. So as this, because I have the mithya ahankara, I have the sense of being one who is in Ishwara. Mithya ahankara. Actually, the whole thing is only Ishwara. Right? But myself being in Ishwara, experiencing Ishwara, being in means I experiencing Ishwara through my sense organs and through my mind, let me always do what is there to be done. Let me always let my devotion be to Dharma. May I be your servant, the servant of Dharma, which is, Dharma is the natural expression of Ishwara. May I always serve Dharma. May I always be your servant. From the standpoint of my mind, may my mind always be reveling in you. May I be your devotee. May you be what is most important to me. May I always give my pranams to you, to Bhagavan. And from the standpoint of myself, I recognize I am only you, that this self, which is myself, is you alone. That's the Eka Shloki of this knowledge. So beautiful, it brings in everything. It even brings in all the karma yoga. It brings in the attitude of a jnani, it brings in dharma, you know. It brings in the tremendous freedom that a jnani has. The tremendous freedom, really, is because I don't need to become happy. I don't need to become whole. And Ishwar totally takes care of my life, my upadi. Right? So letting Ishwar, okay, Bhagwan, this is yours, this is your problem. You, thank you so much. You take care of all of this. And let me just be with you. Let me revel in myself. Let me be with you. The whole thing belongs to you. I am completely free to be whole and complete. I don't have to worry about anything. And that is that. That is the freedom of the jnani. Nothing can ever, even Bhagavan, Swami just say, even Bhagavan can't take away myself. He can't do anything because myself is Bhagavan's self. And the Maya Upadi, what can it do? Right? It can react within itself, but it can do nothing to me because it is Mithya and I'm the Satyam. And so let me just enjoy Ishwar as is. Let's do this, verse 20.
Asti bhati priyam rupam. Nama chetyam shapanchakam. Adyatrayam brahma rupam. Jagadrupam tato dvayam.
Asti bhati priyam rupam. Nama cha iti amsha panchakam. That's cha iti amsha panchakam. Adya trayam brahma rupam jagat rupam tataha dvayam. So this is a famous verse. Swamiji, this will just roll off his lips so frequently. Yeah, probably Bhagishanan too. So asti means, so this is a string of nominatives ending with cha. So this and this and this and this and this, cha, iti, thus, putting this in quotes, okay? So it says asti. Asti means it is. Being, existence, sat, is asti. Bhati, it shines, consciousness. So asti bhati stands for the sat, is asti, the chit, the consciousness is bhati. So it is, and it is known, bhati. Asti bhati priyam. Priyam means ananda, it is beloved. So that which is, that which shines, is consciousness, that's whose nature is ananda. So asti bhati priyam sat chit ananda. It is, it shines as consciousness, and priyam, it is beloved, it is most dear. It's the nature of ananda. The nature of the self is ananda. So asti bhati priyam. And then we have rupam and nama. Nama means name, rupam means form. So we have the satchit ananda, which is Brahman, asti bhati priyam, right? Satchit ananda. And then we have nama rupa. Rupam nama, name and form. So existence, consciousness, ananda, that beloved nature, name and form, cha. So cha now says asti and bhati and priyam and rupam and nama and all of these. So asti, isness, and consciousness, being and consciousness, and beloved being beloved, and form and name, iti, amsha panchakam, this group of five. Amsha means this panchakam, this these five parts, this group of five amshas. Panchakam, group of five. Pancha means five. So panchakam, amsha means part. Yeah. So if I have a whole, I can divide the whole into five parts. So this pancha amshakam, this group of five parts. Asti, bhati, priyam, rupam, nama. So you say that this is this group of five parts, and list them. It says, so in translate, we would have to say like this. There is this group of five parts, of five things. Asti, bhati, priyam, rupam, nama. Adya, trayam. The first three. Adya means trayam, means the group of three. Adyam, the first, the group of three which comes first, which would be asti, bhati, priyam. Those are the first three. The adya first, traya, group of three. The first group of three would be asti, bhati, priyam, being, consciousness, ananda. This first group of three, brahmarupa. Brahmarupam is the nature of Brahman. So Brahman is asti, bhati, priyam. Okay? Sat, chit, ananda. So this first group of three is Brahman, brahmarupam. Jagadrupam, tataha dvayam. Tataha then, we could say then, dvayam, the second group. After that, tataha, like after that, the next group of two, jagadrupam, is the nature of the jagat. Jagadrupam, the nature, the rupa, the nature. Rupa means form, but also at the end of a compound, it often means nature. So the jagat rupam, the nature of the jagat, is the two after that, tataha dvayam, the group of two after that, which is what? Nama rupa. So previously in these verses, we've talked about the srishti, the creation, as nama rupa, anything that has form. Because starting with nama rupa, you have to bring in space, you have to bring in time, you have to bring in change. You can't have nama rupa without these things. At the time and space, imagine nama rupa without space. It's not possible. So time, space, and everything else comes along once you say nama rupa. The five elements come, activity, sattva, rajas, and tamas. All duality, all vikara, all modifications come when we say nama rupa. So in this verse, what this is saying now, we can divide the whole creation and say, just take you as a jiva in terms of your own experience. Whatever has nama rupa is the jagat. Whatever the existence, consciousness, ananda, that is Brahman. And so no matter what experience you have, these five elements are there. The three elements of sat, chit, ananda, we would say are not actually three, but from the standpoint of the creation, we would say everything is. But only the things which have a sukshma sharira, a subtle body, shine. Even though from the standpoint of the atma, of the self, existence, and from the standpoint of my own being, my being is consciousness. I can't separate consciousness from being. Not knower. It is self-evident. If I say self-evident me, that brings in consciousness. The being itself is consciousness. So my existence, my amness is self-evident. As soon as I say self-evident, we bring in consciousness. So the nature of being itself is self-evident, therefore is consciousness. But I don't experience everything here as being conscious. In a way I do, I don't experience the things in the creation as being conscious, only the things that have a subtle body. Those things enjoy consciousness from their own standpoint, but everything equally exists. Okay? And I also don't notice ananda being pervasive to the creation, right? Because for the ananda to shine, you need a shantavritti, right? For ananda to shine in the antakarana, in the sattva, that antakarana can't be too, that vritti, that thought modification, can't be too contaminated by rajas and tamas. To the degree that it's contaminated by rajas and tamas, it becomes, the ananda there becomes something which is true for me in my own self experience, but it's not being reflected in the vritti. In fact, we use a famous example to make this clear. The sun shining in three water buckets. I remember it coming in Atma Bodha. It probably comes in many other places also. Atma Bodha is another Prakarana Granta explanatory text. So just think about this. The sun is equally shining, illumining three water buckets. Three buckets full of water. One bucket is really muddy. One bucket is agitated as though it has some sort of an egg beater in it, you know. And the other bucket is absolutely clear, pristine, calm. So the one sun, not losing its own nature in any way, just it remains as the sun, but that sun also, without any problem, is equally illumining all three. No problem. Just like here, everything exists. No problem with that at all. No problem also, the sun equally illumines, equally shines upon all three water buckets. No preference. The sun isn't saying, oh, I like this one, not this one. Everyone totally gets the same dose. Now, three water buckets are in, not in the shade. They get the equal attention, the equal shining rays of the sun. But the muddy water bucket is depressed. It's not able, because of the tamas, because of the mud in it, it's not able to reflect the sun. And even to say it just reflects the sun a little bit, you feel so, your mind feels so isolated, so unloved, you know, so unconnected, like a foreign body. So this poor water bucket, the poor water, you know, doesn't feel itself at all, right? The agitated water bucket, in that the sun is all over the place. It's like a manic stage in psychology. This is really a manic condition. The mind is you can't stop it. You can't even concentrate because the mind is like it's just shaking all the time, moving. That's like this agitated water bucket. The sun is illumining it so nicely. The reflection of the sun is kinetic, you know, and breaking up all of the time. Then in the clear water bucket, the sun seems to be so beautifully abiding in the clear water, pervading that water, lighting up that water, reflecting that water. The water feels so much at home. It identifies, I am the sun. This is how I'm supposed to be. I'm always supposed to be like this. This is me. The agitated water bucket is saying, I wish I could calm down and just be with myself somehow. I just feel so frenetic. I can't stay still for a minute. And the other water bucket says, I feel so depressed. I don't even know where I am. Where did I go? You know? So, but what about the sun? The sun is shining. The sun is what it is. It's not being affected in any way by the condition of the water. That's my situation. From my own me, I'm not affected in any way. The ananda that I am, the fullness that I am, is ever present. This ananda, the fullness of yourself, ever present, but needs to be differentiated, especially from the strong emotions that the mind is capable of having, that draws me to my concentration to those emotions, taking my own being for granted. But actually, the ananda of yourself, just the satchit ananda, is lighting up those negative emotions. And the positive emotions also for the jnani, for the mumukshu, they can also be a problem. Because the positive emotions, or the shantavrittis, where the sun is so beautifully manifest, and you say, this is me. So you ask Swamiji, always, Swamiji, sometimes I really know myself, but then it goes away, Swamiji, it goes away. How can I make it always stay? That means I'm identifying myself with the reflection, the shantavritti. It's like the sun, the mind identifying the sun with the beautiful reflection of the sun in the mind, right? In the water. The water being, taking itself to be the sun, when the water has a shanta, it's very peaceful, then I'm there. When the water, the mind of the water is agitated, then the sun is all agitated in the water, and I'm so agitated. When the water is muddy, I'm not even able to experience myself. But where am I? This is all reflecting the condition of the upadhi only. I am the sun. Here, who am I? That's the viveka. I'm not away like the sun. The sun's way up there. The water buckets are down here. I'm not way back there in the mind here. I am the very clay of the mind. I'm like the clay pot. I'm the very being of the mind. But the mind, mitya mind, can take on so many different conditions, you know, that I can take myself to be someone who is happy or terribly sad or terribly angry or agitated. Where's the ananda there? There's no ananda. And so, from the standpoint of the sattva, rajas, and tamas creation, some things have no sukshma sharira, no subtle body, right? And so they just reflect being. It is. They're not making any comment at all, but from my experience, all of these things enjoy the sat of the sat-chit ananda. And then I would say, but not everything enjoys consciousness. Only the ones that have the subtle body, they have, this is a conscious being, this is a conscious being, this is a conscious being, but not the floor, not the chair, not the glasses, not the paper. No subtle body. So there's spotty consciousness, there's over all pervasive sat, spotty chit, spotty consciousness, depending upon the sukshma sharira. And among all the sukshma shariras, only some of them are having a shanta vritti at any given time. So it's not only spotty ananda, it's blinking ananda. Blinking, because now shanta vritti, ananda. Ananda, bliss, happiness, joy is present. Oops, negative vritti. That light bulb goes out. Right? So we've got blinking ananda, spotty chit, and pervasive existence from the standpoint of the creation. But from the standpoint of me, I am the sat, which the whole creation enjoys. I am also the chit, the knownness. There are some knowers within that creation that requires a sukshma sharira, but the knownness of the creation, I am the knownness which the creation enjoys. I am the ananda. I am the ananda which is ever present as me, as my own being, not always being reflected in the mind, but ever present experientially, not as an object, but as the self-evident nature of myself. So this part is a little tricky, and it's exactly the place where a beautiful recognition takes place, and that recognition is that your own nature, no matter what the vritti, your own nature is always the same. The wholeness, the ananda, the fullness of your being is always present, even in a dukkha vritti and even in a negative vritti. It's never touched in any way, just like the sun is never touched by what it is illumining. Consciousness, conscious being, which is very swarupa, is fullness, is wholeness, is beauty. That is never touched at any time. And so, in fact, for the jnani, that viveka, in reference to ananda, is so important, because in terms of the vrittis, the thought modifications, ananda comes and goes. Because shanta vrittis change. But the ananda, which is responsible for illumining those vrittis, whether they be a shanta vritti or not, that wholeness which is me, which is my own nature, never changes in any way. So just as my amness is ever present, my consciousness is self-evident, ever present, my wholeness is ever present also. It needs to be differentiated. One way we do that is when we contemplate. I didn't do that this time, but we can, and if you listen to the meditations, this comes and goes. One very nice question to ask yourself, when you're just with yourself, making that differentiation, you're just abiding, you can ask, what am I like? And the Buddha asks, what is my nature? Why does the Shastra say Sat Chit Ananda? What is it about me, just me, that is here right now? No particular situation, just me. That is Ananda. That is beloved. That is most dear. Ask yourself. And then just be with yourself for these, for the Buddha having these questions in mind, because the Buddha is the one that has to do this viveka, right? So with these questions in mind, you just say, you know, how is it that the Shastra says, I am Ananda? How is it that the self, the me, is most dear, you know, is the beloved? And then you can ask yourself, being with that for a while, then you can ask yourself, is there anything else more beloved than this being that is me? That's a good one. Let me try to think of something. Is there anything else that is more beloved than love itself, or fullness, wholeness, wholeness itself? So you have to play with that a little bit. So that the reason is that we only think of ananda or bliss or happiness in reference to a shantavritti, an experience that comes and goes. That's how we think of it, and then we think, oh, when I liberate it, I'll have a permanent shantavritti. That's not going to happen. The mind itself is continually changing. It's continually affected by sattva, rajas, and tamas, even though we don't have big reactions anymore, because you're not superimposing your ananda onto the world to cause those raga dveshas, to bring out those big reactions. But the mind is, it's moods, it's temperaments, tiredness, this and that. The physical body affects the condition of the mind. It always is what it is, changing. It is what it is, changing. That's what it is, continually changing. Yourself is never changing. It's never changing. So once you discover the beloved nature, you say, this ananda, this is what they mean by ananda, this beautiful wholeness and completeness of myself. Then you realize no vritti, no experience ever takes that away. Just like no experience of whatever the sun is illumining, it cannot take away any of the sun's nature at all. And like that, nothing can take away my nature, nor can anything cover my nature. So we think, oh, I have this dukkha vritti, so the ananda, the satchit ananda of myself is covered. No, it isn't. The only reason it's covered is because of ajnanam, because of the identification with the shantavritti, the lack of viveka. You are never covered at any time in any way. Yeah. And so once you recognize the wholeness of yourself, you just simply are ever present. Your mind is thinking, is carrying on, is doing this and doing this work, doing that work. None of it is touching you or taking away from you or covering you. So that's the viveka. It's very thorough viveka, very beautiful. So you have to keep sitting with this knowledge and making that reality, that recognition of reality. And that's it.
Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate.